Welcome to the Creative Conception Podcast, a podcast dedicated to sharing inspiring stories of family creation. I'm your host, Erica Price. Thank you so much for joining. See that. Welcome to the Creative Conception Podcast. I'm your host, Erica Price, and in this episode, I'll be chatting about myself. This is the first episode, and I'm really excited to share my fertility journey. And I've invited my sister here to chat with me about it and interview me and ask me questions. Welcome, Steph.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Erica. Such a pleasure. So Erica, I'm excited to get into your story because it's one of the most exciting creative conception stories I know. And most of you are going to be getting to know Erica really well, but just a little overview of who she is. She's basically an incredible mom of three kids now, and she has a set of twins that are 6 months old and a son that is 2.5. Erica is one of the most inspiring people I know. Even though she's my little sister, I can say that about her. As a big sister, it's usually the other way around, but not in this case. She swam the Rottnest Channel, which, if you know anything about long distance swimming, it's from the island of Rottnest, well, from starting from Perth to the island of Rottnest, which is 20 kilometers. She's done it all sorts of ways and 9 times. She's actually done it once while she was pregnant, and that was the time that she swam it with me, which I'm so grateful that she swam with me despite being pregnant. And the second time she did it was as a support. She did it again, actually, as a support kayaker for a team of friends. So she was also pregnant that time when she was in the kayak helping them out. Isn't that right, Erica?
Well, kind of. I wasn't in the kayak. I was the support crew on the boat. But yes, I was 6 weeks pregnant with the twins and couldn't tell anyone. So I just tried to not throw up and eat food all day, which was kind of funny for a non-swimmer, but, yeah, it was a really fun day and I was happy to support, but I had to eat all day and try not to be sick myself.
It's awesome that you're such an adventurer, even when you're pregnant. So that's awesome. And Erica is also a life coach and she coaches basically two different specialties. One is anyone who's looking to start a family or grow their family. And also the second one is moms who are looking to have some support in figuring out the family life balance, which I can completely relate to. So Erica, thanks so much for talking with us today. I'm going to start with an overview of your fertility journey. Please let us know what exactly is the journey you've been on.
Yes, great question. So I think is kind of a good place to start because I could probably talk about my journey for a very long time. And it depends how much detail you want. I'm sure over the next few episodes, as I'm interviewing other people, I'll be adding, you know, a little bit about what I've been through as well. But to give you a brief overview, my husband and I decided to start trying. Well, I decided we were going to start trying in 2011. He's pretty laid back. So I think, you know, he just kind of goes with the flow. So if I wanted to wait a little bit longer, I don't think he would have minded that either. But we decided in 2011, we had a 4-month trip planned to be overseas. And I thought that was a great time to start trying because we were together 24/7. And unfortunately, nothing happened in those 4 months. So fast forward a little while later, I think we tried on and off kind of natural remedies and different things for about 3 years, which is quite a while. So I was 29 when we started trying. So for about 3 years, we tried naturally and with kind of, you know, natural supplements. So after that, we were ready to get some more help because it just wasn't happening for us. So I'm just having a look at my notes because it's a bit of a timeline. So October 2013, we went to our first fertility clinic and started asking some questions and trying to decide what we wanted to do. So we decided to go ahead with our first round of IVF in January 2014, so pretty soon after that. The first round was actually not too bad. I had 10 eggs collected. 7 that were mature, 5 that fertilized, and 3 that grew to day 3, which if you're actually fertile isn't a very good number, but I thought it was okay. So you learn a lot as you go. So I had a transfer then that did not result in pregnancy, which I found out 2 weeks later. And then July 2014, we did a frozen embryo transfer, which again was unsuccessful. And then after those two rounds, I felt like I needed a break. I felt like I had sort of lost who I was and what made me happy. So one of the things that I really had to learn going through this fertility journey was that, you know, there were times when I wanted to put everything on hold and just focus on my fertility journey. And I felt like that was what I needed to do to get pregnant. And then I would lose sight of all the things that normally make me happy. And because I wasn't getting the result I wanted, then I would have to kind of backtrack and try to revive all of these other things that I love and that I wanted to spend time doing. So I kind of fluctuated between those two things. So it's quite funny that you mentioned Rot Nest, because I remember thinking, should I sign up for a solo when we were trying? Because what if, you know, I'm pregnant, and I'm sure a lot of people do that as well. They're like, oh, well, I don't want to plan too far in advance or plan this trip or this or whatever. And I eventually got to a point where I knew I needed to just sign up for things. And, you know, if I actually fell pregnant, hallelujah, then I would cancel what I needed to cancel. So I kind of switched that mentality a few times. So I took a break for almost a year. And then I spoke to a few people that had been through different fertility journeys, and one of them recommended a different clinic in Perth. And I wasn't really impressed with the one we were at. So we decided to get on a wait list to see a new doctor and get a second opinion. I didn't realize that when we did that, it was going to be a 5-month wait. So we waited 5 months to do that. Went to the clinic, loved the new doctor. So this is March 2016. And then we decided to do some different tests before we went ahead into the next cycle. So I had a hysteroscopy, a laparoscopy, a biopsy, just to see if we could actually identify. And of course, my husband had all the testing done as well to see if we could figure out why it wasn't working. So age-wise, I was still quite young for going through IVF. And because of my fitness and health background, I think a lot of people were just kind of surprised that I was having so much trouble, because I was taking such good care of my body. So, so we wanted some more information. And I had a trip overseas booked. I actually went on a surf trip to the Mentawais, which was absolutely amazing. We spent more time in the Telos Islands, but it was a girls' surf trip. And so I knew that I wasn't going to do a transfer before I went. So we decided to do this this little surgery to see if we could figure out what was going on. So after having that, there was nothing definitive. I had a little bit of an endometriosis, but it shouldn't have impacted my fertility. The only thing my doctor said was that my eggs were looking a little bit kind of, my ovaries were looking kind of yellow and a little bit older than my age. So it wasn't super definitive, but that was the only thing they saw that could be impacting it. So 2016, we did another egg collection. 2017, we did two more. And the unfortunate part was that my results were getting worse each time I did it in terms of eggs that were collected. So the number of eggs that were mature, and then the number that were fertilized, and then that we could actually transfer, were less and less each time.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we were going to go for a fifth egg collection. This was going to be our last one before trying something else. And my thyroid levels were all out of whack, so I couldn't even do the transfer. And I was so discouraged by the process at that point that we decided to go a completely different route. So we decided to go with an egg donor. And
wow. That must have been quite a decision.
It was. My doctor was incredible, and he said, you know, we can keep doing this if you want to. Mm-hmm. And I think I was 37, 36 or 37 at the time. And in my head, my kind of rough cutoff was sort of like, oh, maybe I'll keep doing this till I'm 40. So, you know, the definition of insanity being doing the same thing over and over and getting the same result or a worse result in my case. So we decided to look into egg donation. And once we knew that that was an option, I'd never heard of it before we got to this point, never considered it.
Right.
I didn't even know that different countries have different policies and that you can go overseas and do this. And so once we knew it was an option, it actually, I think I cried when at the thought of not using my own eggs, not being able to do that. And a couple hours later, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Like I actually I'm not really tied to it having to be my DNA. So what I wanted was what attracted me to that option was that I still got to experience pregnancy and feeding and that sort of thing. And the more I read about it, the more I was comfortable with it because of there's a lot of research in this area around, you know, what is during pregnancy, what is a woman's DNA? How does it impact a baby's DNA? And how does it actually pull out different traits? And it actually has a sort of genetic, like it still has an impact, which I thought was really interesting. So it's not always, you know, purely nature versus nurture. So September 2017, we decided to go with an egg donor, and we decided to do it in South Africa for a whole bunch of reasons. The brief version is that their private medical system is on par with anything in Australia or Canada or the States. It's an English speaking country. It's anonymous, and there's an egg donor list ready to go. Like, you don't have to wait.
Wow.
Yeah. It's also from Perth. It's a 10-hour flight to Johannesburg and then a couple hour flight to Cape Town. So it's fairly accessible for Perth. And yeah, that's what we decided to do. So in November 2017, we flew to South Africa and went on safari first, of course. And of course. We went through the whole process. We, you know, it's anonymous, so you never get to meet your egg donor, but we did get to bring her flowers and write her a card and leave it there for her, which was really special. And and then December in 2017 was my first positive pregnancy test ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So 6 years in, I had never had a pregnancy test, and I waited for the blood test because I just wanted a definitive answer. I didn't want to do a home pregnancy test in case, but I did do one after just because I wanted to actually see if they work.
you had to pee on the stick.
That's right. I wanted to see what that was going to be like. So that resulted in our beautiful baby boy, Kobe. And then when Kobe was just over a year old, we went back. So we have frozen embryos in South Africa. So I went back in end of October 2019. Yep. And unfortunately, that one didn't work. So we had a double embryo transfer that resulted in no pregnancy. And I went back in end of January 2020. Which could not have been better timing because COVID was just starting.
Oh my gosh.
And had a double embryo transfer that resulted in our two baby twins. So two girls.
Wow.
So now we have a full house.
And their names. And what are their names?
Lani and Kaya.
Yes, you do have a full house. That's for sure. I wish I was there to experience it, but I'll get there one day. Yeah, what an amazing story. Talk about taking you, you know, not just from one clinic to another, but literally to another country. Yeah,
three times.
To fulfill the dream that you had. Yeah, amazing. What an incredible story. Wow. And it sounds like, I mean, even just the logistics, which is kind of what you ran us through, are complicated. Yeah. But I can only imagine, you know, what the parallel emotional journey was. Mm-hmm. So could you take us through that? What was your thought process? And I love that you said that you pointed out that you needed to take a break in between mm-hmm. and just kind of ground yourself back into who you are and what makes you happy, because yeah. you can kind of get lost from that with all the determination of becoming a
get
mom.
Get it done. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's just do it. And you feel like you're on a clock.
Yeah.
So how did you, you know, tell us, you know, what was the up and down for you and how did you cope with it at different points?
Oh, there was a lot of up and down. It's definitely a roller coaster. Anyone going through any sort of fertility challenge knows what it's like to, you know, just even the heart racing of having to inject myself with needles in the belly, you know, that sort of thing. It's just, the whole thing is just so up and down and you're on, you know, you're on drugs, you're on hormones. So it just creates, I think the helpful thing for me was knowing that you had been through it as well and knowing that these drugs can make you really crazy. And yes, they might have improved over the years, but I think knowing that, I was really aware of, you know, if I feel up and down, if I feel like I need to cry, if I feel like really angry or really annoyed, I was really aware of where that was coming from. So that was actually really helpful.
Oh, that's awesome. And that means your podcast will definitely help people who are going through this to know, yeah, you're not alone, Absolutely. That other people, that it's very normal and you can be aware of that.
Yeah. The other thing I found that fluctuated a lot for me was when I wanted to share what and how I wanted to share things. So sometimes I found it really helpful to talk to people about it and for people to know. And other times I wanted to keep it to myself and just have a space where, for example, I could show up to swim training and no one knows and everyone just treats me like normal Erica the swimmer, not Erica, poor Erica yes. going through, you know, whatever round of IVF. So just trying to figure out what I need at any particular time. My husband is super steady and that was really helpful. He also is really laid back and was never in a huge rush or never really, you know, there was a few points where he stressed about it, but it definitely wasn't, you know, it definitely wasn't the roller coaster that I went through, which was really helpful to keep me a little bit more grounded. He was just really positive. Right. He just always assumed it would happen.
These great husbands. Yeah.
A couple of moments I guess I'll share is one is I remember going to a yoga class in Perth and with such a fantastic instructor. Her name's Rihanna, and she does a lot of inner work. And the class was about your inner knowing. So your inner teacher, your inner wisdom, not your brain or your head, but in your body, in your, like at the core of who you are, the knowing that exists there. And I remember in that class knowing that I was going to be a mom. So
yeah, I can see that brings up a lot for you. It meant a lot to connect to that you knew you were going to be a mom.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. I just knew. And so anytime I felt like discouraged or that things were taking so long or I didn't know if I was going to continue or whatever, I would go back to that moment and remember that I knew that this is what was going to happen.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah. Thank goodness for those moments. They really anchor us, don't they? Yeah. And keep things alive for us and help us find a way.
Yeah. The other thing that I did that helped a lot is before going to South Africa, I wanted to kind of clear all the frustration, anger, anticipation, nerves, everything that I had been carrying around before trying something completely new. So I went to a kinesiologist named Jude Casey in Perth, and I had never been to one before. And it, you know, I won't go into it too much because it takes a bit of explaining, but it's a whole mix of kind of Eastern medicine, chakras, energy healing, chi, mantras, muscle testing. So it's a whole range of these things. And she spent a good hour and 45 minutes with me. And in that session, I would have moments where I would just get completely hot and start crying. And I wasn't sure exactly what it was. It was something that we were saying or something that I was experiencing. And she would help me clear that. And then I would feel totally fine. We went through cycles of this. And at the end of it, I felt exhausted, but I felt like I had actually let go of a lot of the tension and the emotion and the attachment and stuff that I had. So the interesting part about that is that I did that before going to South Africa when I fell pregnant with Kobe. And then the second time I went to South Africa, I didn't go see her. It didn't result in a pregnancy. And then the third time I went, we really worked with being receptive to two embryos. So it was all about, because I was very, I guess it's such a safe space that I could be like, you know, I actually am really open to having twins. If we're putting two embryos in, like I want to be completely receptive to both. And so all of our wording was about receiving two embryos, and it resulted in twins, which is, I just think is really cool.
Wow. That is awesome. Wow. It is amazing how psychologically at times you really do have to unload in order to receive, like too, you have to find a way to, let go of everything that's building up, because it's also at such a pace that you don't really, you know, if you don't take the time to stop and unload, then no one really offers it to you.
And sometimes, if you don't create that space, you don't realize how much you're holding on to. The second time I went, I felt a lot, it felt a lot less emotional. Like it didn't feel like that huge buildup that was in the first one. It just felt really good to be there and to just align, you know, what I really wanted.
That makes a lot of sense, going back the second time and having Kobe back home, and and that it was that you were in a different headspace. Wow, what an incredible journey. Can we zoom in on when you decided to use the eggs, like an egg donation? Yep. I know that the donor is anonymous. What's the process? I mean, I'm sure people are super curious because it's not something you hear about every day. Yeah. So yeah, you decide you're going to go through with it. And then what happens after that?
I was fortunate enough at that point to be really open in sharing my story. And a friend of a friend knew someone that had been through the process and had been to Cape Town.
Oh, awesome.
And had used the egg donor clinic and the hospital that I was planning on using. So I sat down with her and I asked her how she chose a donor because I was really interested. Oh. And she actually also had this letter from Mel C from the Spice Girls. So Mel C from the Spice Girls has been through this process and shared her journey and wrote a letter to kind of all the moms that were going through this after her. And anyway, so there was a little bit of like help and information and education that helped me. So there's a couple of different ways you can do it. You can decide to try and find an egg donor that looks like you. So in South Africa, it's anonymous, but you do get like child photos of the donor.
Oh, wow.
So if they have children, sometimes they'll have like their photos of their children, or they'll have themselves as children. So you can look at the characteristics. So they have it all filled out, like brown hair or eyes or, you know, whatever, but you also get to see a photo of them as a child. And so first...
That must be so helpful.
It is. Well, they actually fill out a whole profile. So you not only see their photo and their characteristics, you can read about their background, their family, what they did for jobs, you know, their education, their interests, why they wanted to donate the eggs, just a whole range of things. And so you can try to align with different things. So you can basically try to get someone that looks like the mom. Or you can look for someone that looks like the dad. So,
oh, cool.
So the lovely mom that I met up with, they had chosen to go with someone that looked like her husband, so that okay, the baby would definitely look like him. So they chose eye color and hair color and features that aligned with him.
Right.
So initially, Ryan and I were going to do that as well. So to start with, we ruled out, you know, people that have black hair or red hair or dark skin or anything that would make it really obvious that it wasn't our child. So we're trying to align it to somewhat. And then we looked at height, and we looked at a few different things. So we narrowed it down, and there really wasn't a lot of donors that look like him, like really blonde, blue-eyed, and had his kind of features. So we decided to start looking for donors that look like me. So,
oh, nice.
So yeah, darker curly hair. And then the more you read the profiles, the more you get into, you know, oh, this person also swims, or this person is super active and they're athletic. I really like that. Or this person does this for work, and I think that's really cool. Or, you know, so reading through the profiles, we narrowed it down to 5. And then I reached out to the clinic to ask them for help, to say, of these 5, which do you think looks the most like me? Or do you have any that I haven't considered that you think look like me? And they sent me back. Oh, and the other thing I asked them was, do you have anyone that's donated previously that's been successful that looks like me? So they sent.
That sounds like the perfect combination.
Yeah. So they sent us back 3, and because of some of our search criteria, I hadn't seen any of them. And we found one who we thought looked like me. She had previously donated eggs 2 and was super fertile, had tons of eggs. So we decided we wanted to go with as many guarantees as we could, rather than pick a profile that, you know, that we like and could be great, but you don't know what their fertility is like if they haven't been through the process. So you don't know how they're going to react to the fertility drugs. You don't know what kind of quality their eggs are going to be. So on paper,
or how likely those eggs are to be fertilized, which is so key. Yeah.
And on paper, I might have looked like an okay donor, you know, when I was younger, but I wouldn't have been. So we decided to go with their recommendation, with this wonderful, beautiful girl who had donated 2 previously, both resulting in multiple babies. Because we wanted the highest chance we could. And we also were also hoping to get a bunch of embryos so that we could have a family. We wanted siblings for our first baby. We didn't just want one.
Wow. That sounds, what a great way to choose a
I know. So
donor.
We did all this work, and then we didn't go with any of the ones that we narrowed down.
No, but it kind of got you used to the process, which is really great. And honing in on what it is you're looking for, what are the top, you know, like traits that you absolutely want to make sure that this person has.
And then also reaching out to the people that know the most about the process and know the most about.
Yes. Like, success.
What, and, you know, who do I think looks like me versus who do they think looks like me?
Yeah, true. Very true. So just a tiny shout out to that person who donated the eggs, that lovely woman. We send you so much thanks.
Oh my gosh.
So just so you know.
I know. It's the definitely the most amazing gift I've ever received, and anonymously.
Yeah. And what a great, great, great gift to be given. Wow, Erica, so far I know that we're going to get into your story at different points in your podcast, and I'm so glad, because it would be a shame to lose any of the details, but thanks for that part of it. The next question I have for you is, what would you say are your greatest strengths as a mom?
That is a tricky question. What is my greatest strength as a mom? I think the journey that I've been through has made me super grateful to even have kids, even on a bad day, even when we get no sleep, even when everyone's sick. It doesn't make it easier, but I am super grateful for all of it and the just being able to experience it. So that's
And has that changed the lens of what you look at the world through? What, how else has it impacted looking at your kids? What else has it impacted?
The lesson that I shared with you before about getting quiet and listening to what you know is true for you at your core, and listening to that, I think has been the biggest lesson through the process. And being able to use that in other areas. And when my mind is really busy, then finding the space to do that, because it doesn't ever lead you astray.
Right. It kind of takes you out of all the busyness of everything that's around. And you're right. That really does help in a lot of areas of your life, not just having kids or deciding if you want kids.
My other strength, I would say, is being quite organized. So, being able to set up a really good schedule for us. And I've had a lot of success with my kids just being on a very consistent routine, so that they know what to expect and they know what's coming. And when we do decide to do something different or throw something else into the mix, then they kind of have a baseline to come back to.
Yeah. Right.
So I feel like it.
You know, organization is awesome for a mom, especially because there's so much to coordinate the more kids you add into the mix. It's one thing to coordinate this whole journey, which sounds like it was like took a lot of coordination as well. Mm-hmm. But then once you have, what are you, your five people in your house now, mm-hmm. all with different schedules and different agendas.
Yep. Different personalities. Yep.
Awesome. What do you think is the most challenging about scheduling everybody's or keeping everybody in the flow of things without melting down too much?
It's a delicate balance because there is so much going on. As soon as someone is sick or I'm feeling overtired or whatever, we just have to cancel what we're doing and get better and take the rest when we need it. I think that's the most challenging thing. I like to do a lot of things and I'm quite ambitious. And I also know that, you know, when you try to force it, it doesn't happen, or when people aren't feeling well, or it's just not the right decision on that day. So you just have to rest.
And isn't it so different to have like different people's agendas on the table now? Because I mean, first you're a couple and it's you and your husband and your partner, and you're balancing those intentions and you know what they want to do. And then now you have three new kids and you're just kind of, you get to know them as they grow, and then they show up with these personalities.
Yeah.
And they're all super different.
Yeah. And you have to just know that, you know, whatever you plan, it's never going to go like what you have in your head. It just isn't. Like, we had this wonderful plan to go to the beach on Christmas Day, and I had this vision in my head of, you know, the babies lounging under the umbrella and Kobe playing along the shore and, you know, Ryan and I having some fresh fruit and croissants and mimosas. Yeah, that didn't happen. Kaya cried the whole time. We forgot the umbrella, so we were trying to find some shade under our little wagon. Kobe was running in a different direction. It was just, it was chaos. We didn't even open our cooler with food or drinks. We got a family picture, stayed about 5 minutes, and then decided to go.
I love that. That is something so clear in your mind ends up like so different, but awesome in the same right. You know what I mean? Because like the chaos, sometimes you have to just laugh. Yeah. Like, it'll just make you laugh. Maybe not in the moment, but
you can laugh after.
After, when you see. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, when you see that picture of like, you know, someone holding Kaya and she's like got this like cry baby, nasty, I'm really upset face. Yeah. And Kobe's trying to run away from the picture.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't.
I love
if
that.
If you were attached to what it was going to be like in your head, you would just never go anywhere, because it never turns out like that.
Wow. I think that's like a key thing through your whole story. If you're attached to how it's going to come out, you will be sadly disappointed. And you can't stay stuck in that, can you? Like when you attach to what you think is going to happen.
Yeah.
The whole fertility journey is literally letting go of everything you think is going to happen. Yep. 4 months, you know, holiday, we're going to make a baby. It'll be awesome. Turns to, why not? Why didn't it happen? Yeah. And then it goes on from there.
Yep, absolutely.
And if you're attached to having your own eggs, mm-hmm. if you had, I mean, would have led to a completely different outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe that I was thinking that I might still be going through the same thing now.
Right.
Yeah. It was just, it was actually a really easy decision. Once we knew that it was an option and we took, you know, a couple hours to process the sort of grief around not using my eggs, then it was
right.
Once we worked through that, it was like, yeah, of course. And then when we went to South Africa and we were going through it and all of a sudden, you know, we're working with 22 eggs and like 15 of them fertilize it, and just the numbers and the success, we were like, oh, this is how people get pregnant. So, and it made us realize how bad our results were. Like, I think fertility doctors want to stay positive and, you know, want to encourage you. But if someone said, hey, lady, your chances are 0 to 4% that you're ever going to have an egg to fertilize and that that it could implant, then I would have, I mean, who knows if I would have decided to go the egg donor route earlier. It kind of only, you kind of learn about possibilities when you're ready to hear them as well. But going through it a different way made me realize how poor our results had been with IVF. Yeah.
Right. Oh, wow. It puts it all in perspective. Yeah. Well, let's zoom out at the 30,000 foot view. And what would be your advice to another woman who might be in a similar situation to what you were in?
I hope no one is ever in that situation, but it happens all the time. And there's so many different situations that are just as hard and just as complicated. And what would I say? I would say to take time to listen to what you feel like you need and don't be afraid to change your mind. You know, you can try one thing and then decide, nope, this isn't working or this doesn't feel right or whatever, and do something else. So like us changing doctors was a huge shift in terms of how we felt, how connected we were to the doctor. And then ultimately he delivered all of our children. And just knowing what I went through in terms of there's so many people that have so much advice, like listen to it, be open to it, but make your own decision and see if you can quiet your mind enough to try to let that inner knowing kind of guide you.
Wow, that's both of those are good pieces. I mean, I felt the same way about the doctors that we were using or that we went to, you know, have support us. And I felt the same way about Dr. Barwin, and you'll hear that in a later episode. Yeah. But I had this kind of like, I just didn't click with him, no. And when I had heard about another doctor that someone else had, you know, connected really well with, I went with that doctor in Montreal versus another doctor who had been recommended to us by Dr. Barwin. Right. And it made all the difference. Definitely. Mm. It's kind of like you just walk into the office and you connect with that person. And you say, wow, he was so fearless. I was amazed by that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was really awesome.
There's something else I would add as well, which is to figure out who you really trust and who you want to share your journey with. And don't be afraid to talk about it, because if you ever listen to any of Brené Brown's work around shame and vulnerability and how shame can't exist if you talk about it, if you say it out loud, then I think that's really important. And to know who you want to share it with and how you want to share it and have a safe space to be able to do that. In my journey, I was working at an incredible company and had a lot of really great people around me. So I felt comfortable sharing my journey with them. And through that, I had so many conversations with people that connected me through them, or people that knew people around what they had done, what they had been through. And that was so helpful as well, talking to other people that have been through similar things. I remember this one girl, Sophie, who gave me, well, she was the one that recommended the second clinic we went to. And she said that she had a support network of people going through similar things, and eventually all of them had their families.
Wow. Yeah.
So she was like, you know, as we were going through this, it was so great to be around people who were going through the same thing and having success to encourage us. And that knowing of, you know, eventually something's going to work, or we're going to figure out a way to have the family we want. So I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I think for your mind, being able to see that journey for someone else as well. And I love that at the other end of the spectrum, you also took times, there were times where you didn't share what you were doing at that particular moment with any of us, like in your family, because the pressure was too much, or because it would have been too much to have these conversations and give updates on how it was going. So, I mean, that whole thing about getting quiet, you must have really been quiet in yourself to ask yourself, you know, which is it the time for sharing and hearing people's stories? And when is it the time to just like not tell anyone anything and let me be on this journey by myself?
Yes, it's such a good point, Steph, because when we went to South Africa to eventually have Kobe, pretty much everyone knew that we were going. I was really open about the journey. And then afterwards, the awkward part is no one wants to ask you when you get back, but you don't want to say anything, or at least I didn't want to say anything straight away. I wanted to wait until I was 12 weeks or 13 weeks. And it was hilarious. I could tell it was on everyone's mind that I ran into you, but they were, you know, they were good enough not to ask outright.
Right.
So that was a little bit tricky. And so that's why for the second time I went, we told no one. So it was just Ryan and I that knew. And I think what I was craving was that I really want to surprise people with the pregnancy. I want to see what that's like.
Yeah.
I want to say, guess what? I'm 13 weeks. This happened 3 months ago and no one knew. Like, I just thought that would be really fun. And what I found from that trip, because we had a double transfer and we actually lost 2 embryos through the thawing process then as well. It was really hard to take that news. I had Ryan to share it with, and I didn't have anyone beyond that. And so for my next trip, I chose to tell you and our other sister, Josie, because I felt like I wanted your positive energy, and I wanted to be able to text people I knew from South Africa on their time zone that would be awake when Ryan was asleep. I needed a little bit of extra support, and I really wanted a couple of people to know. So that was just you and Josie. And I have a friend based out of South Africa that knew both times, because I actually saw her on the first trip. So, you know, one of my favorite moments was telling our mom and dad that I was pregnant.
Oh,
it was. Yeah. And I think I was only 6 weeks, but we had just found out that it was twins. And I thought, oh, I got to tell them. So we told them I was pregnant. And of course, mom's first reaction was, but you haven't even been to South Africa. actually, I've been twice, mom. Sorry, I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want you to worry. And then the next thing was we sent them the picture of the image with the 2 embryos without telling them that was 2. And then mom said, Erica, there's two. There's two in there. As if I didn't know. It was so good. And because they were on video, I could actually see their reaction. So that was worth it. That was what I was kind of craving from the second one. But yeah, yes. Trying to find that balance is like, for me, it changed each time. And I just had to go with what I felt like I needed at the time.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks so much for talking with us, Erica. I look forward to listening to this interview and also all the ones to follow. Thank you so much for sharing your journey. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you for interviewing me. That was a lot of fun. And yeah, it's kind of good to have you ask me questions because, like I said, there's so much and there's so much information. So it's kind of good to know, you know, what you're really interested in hearing. And if anyone else has any other questions for me, write it in the comments, ask me questions, go for it, because I'll be doing more of these podcasts and also some kind of more educational videos as well. So I'll be happy to answer any questions when that comes up.
It's going to be so good. I look forward to it.
Okay, Steph, thanks for coming on, and I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Erica. Take care.